to the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange. Today's topic is creating documentation for debug tool problems. Today's presenter is Thomas Soriano. Thomas joined debug tool development in 1997 and transferred to AIM Level 2 support in 2002, concentrating on debug tool. At this time, I would like to turn the presentation over to Thomas.
Thank you very much, Joseph, and good morning to everybody. Thank you for joining us for this WSTE presentation. I am Thomas Soriano, representing debug tool support, and I will be talking about the various kinds of documentation for helping us at IBM to diagnose problems with the debug tool or ZOS product. Now, some of you may recall from some of my previous WSTE presentations where I described debug tool as an execution environment. And because debug tool interacts with multiple subsystems and components such as, well, CICS or DB2 or VTAM, RACF, ISPF, et cetera, it really would not be sufficient if the debug tool simply provided single tracing facility of its own internal processing for diagnosing problems. Now, debug tool does provide a log. Some of you that have used debug tool before are familiar with the log window at the bottom. By default, appears at the bottom of your screen, and that this log is used for tracking the results of debugging commands. But for problems such as, say, slow performance or abandon or other system-type errors, it's really necessary to make use of the diagnostics that are provided by the various components and subsystems that are also involved with the execution of the application. So what I'd like to do today is to show you some of the more important major documentation that we at IBM request when our debug tool users encounter problems. Now, what I'm going to do here is I'm going to ask Joseph to switch to slide number 2, and we're going to go through a brief agenda of the topics that we'll cover in this hour. I'm going to start with SysM dumps, which we use very frequently for diagnosing abandons. And then I'm going to discuss the CICS auxiliary or aux trace, which we use for diagnosing CICS problems such as slow performance or if debug tool is not starting. Next, we're going to look at the EPDC trace, and this stands for the Execution and Program Data Control Protocol. And this trace shows the interchange between the debug tool ZOS backend and the graphical user frontend or GUI frontend. Next, we'll continue looking at the debug tool log, which I just mentioned previously, and then also discuss some ways to provide additional information in the log, which helps us to diagnose these problems. And then we'll also look at the value of the system log, which I'm sure you're very familiar with that you view through ISPF. Now, screen captures are especially important for problems dealing with application interfaces, such as a CICS BMS map, and also for illustrating problems that the user encounters while debugging with the remote debug interface. This is the GUI front end that customers can obtain through products like RDZ or WDZ. And then finally, we'll briefly discuss performance reporting using the IBM Application Performance Analyzer, and then I will review the methods for sending documentation to IBM. What I'd like to do now is to move to our introduction slide. Please move to slide number 3. Now, in this slide, what I've listed are some of the major types of documentation that we use and some of the types of errors that we use these documents to diagnose. Now, the SysM dump is the most important document, I feel, for diagnosing abandons because the SysM dump contains the LE and debug tool control blocks and system data that we need to analyze for these abandons. The SysM dump essentially takes a snapshot of the environment so that we can see what is happening at the time of the error. Now, the CICS auxiliary trace is especially valuable for reviewing non-ABAN problems, such as slow performance or if debug tool is not starting for the program, because the trace records a running history of the CICS events that occur before the error occurs. Now, the aux trace can also be helpful with ABANs because, again, it shows us what events are occurring in the CICS internals before the actual ABAN occurs. So there's value in with aux traces in both ABANs and non-ABAN situations. Now, the EPDC trace, as I mentioned, tracks the interplay between the debug tool running on the ZOS and the Windows client. And the EPDC trace is mainly used to diagnose behavioral problems in the remote interface. For example, a variable is showing an invalid value, or say you're trying to display double byte character data and the display appears corrupted. The EPDC trace will show what data is being passed under the covers back and forth between the remote front end and the ZOS back end. For example, say you're trying to set a breakpoint, but for some reason it's not working. We can look at the EPDC trace and try to analyze that action by looking at things such as whether the statement number that you're trying to associate with that breakpoint is a valid statement number, for example. Now, the debug tool log is probably one of the most valuable pieces of documentation for virtually any kind of problem with debug tool, because it records the history of all the debugging actions that the user was taking and then the consequent results of those actions. And as I mentioned earlier, the debug tool log can also be enhanced with additional information by using the appropriate debugging commands. And later in this hour, I will provide some examples of very useful commands for adding information into the log that's very helpful for our analysis. Now, the system trace and the job output are familiar to you. They're very useful for looking for any related errors that might be put out by the operating system or by other components like, you know, VTAM, for example. Now, the debug tool also puts out error messages to the system log, such as the EQA9999E messages. And so the system log is also very valuable in addition to the debug tool log for our diagnosis. Now, when customers are installing the product or, say, upgrading their PTS for debug tool, the job outputs of those jobs are very helpful for us to diagnose problems. For example, if you're upgrading your PTFs and you're running an SMPE job and you get, say, an apply failure, it's very valuable if the user can save that job output and send that to IBM for review. Now, we have an online tech note that you can review at the following URL, which I pasted at the bottom of this slide. And you can also find this link if you go to the Debug Tool main website and select the support link. Okay, now let's go into more details about these different documentations by moving to slide number 4, please. Okay, sysmdumps. Now, the key point to remember when generating a sysmdump for an ABAN is to try to generate it as close as possible to the actual time of the ABAN, because errors are often percolated throughout various components in the operating system. Sometimes we get a sysmdump that hasn't been generated until long after the LE and debug tool system data has been purged, and so we may need to ask the customer to check the LE options that they used when they were generating that sysmdump. Now, if you're working with, of course, we're talking about an LE-enabled application in this case. And in that situation, you can help ensure against creating the dump too late by using the following LE runtime options, which I've listed before below. The abnormal termination of enclave, the option abend is what we ask for in order to issue an abend for any severity 2 or higher conditions. the terminating thread actions option, we ask that you specify UA dump because this will generate an LE dump and a U4039 system dump. Now, the trap on option is we ask that you specify that in order to fully enable the LE condition handler. And also, trap on is required for app term enclave to have effect as well. Let's continue the discussion by moving on to slide number 5. Now, we were talking about LE environments in the previous slide, but if you're debugging a non-LE application, the LE runtime options are obviously not an option for you for helping to generate the dump. Also, say your site has limited system resources and it has to place restrictions on the user to be able to create dumps automatically. So one way to generate a dump under these circumstances is to use the slip command. Now, slip is a very complex utility with many options and would probably merit a whole hour of presentation. The best place to find information about slip is in the ZOS MVS system commands. But for your reference, what I've done is I've attached a few slip examples that we've used with our customers in the past. And in these examples, you'll see that I'm setting special conditions that for triggering the dump that we want. Now, in this example at the bottom, what I'm trying to do is generate a slip on an OC4 abend. And you can tell that if you take a look at the COMP option, which is set to S0C4. Now, I have another example on slide number 6, so if you could please move to slide number 6 now. Now, if you're debugging multiple problems in your application, it may not be practical for you to try to create a dump for each app, and maybe you're just trying to debug things, you know, one at a time. And again, if your site has restricted resources, it may, frown on you filling up the system with a lot of dumps. So one way is to try to narrow down the conditions to restrict the dump creation to just a particular type of error. And in this example, what I've done was we have an error symptom, which is an EQA9999E message reporting an error on a module, a debug tool module called EQA30STO. And what I've done in my example is I'm triggering the dump when the message strings EQA9999E and EQA30STO are detected. Okay, let's move on to slide 7, where I'd like to discuss a few other dump options. There are other ways to generate dumps, such as forcing a snap dump and the generalized trace facility. For example, if the debug tool is looping or it's not responding, obviously you're not going to generate an abend dump, but you can ask the system programmer to use the cancel command with the dump option to force a dump. Now, we actually don't request GTF traces too often, but I just wanted to mention this because I know that some customers have provided these in the past. Again, GTF is a very complex facility, and it would really be beyond the scope of this hour to discuss GTF tracing. So, besides the fact that you use the start GTF command, I would really recommend reviewing the manual, the MVS Diagnosis Tools and Surface Aids, I believe it's Chapter 10, for more information about generalized trace facility. And the cancel command, just like the slip command, is also discussed in the MVS system commands. Okay, now let's start talking about CICS dumps by moving on to slide number 8, please. Okay, SysM dumps CICS. Okay, to generate a SysM dump in a CICS region, there are certain parameters and setup that's needed in order to set that up. And I've tried to describe some of them here. The CEMT transaction is used to set the system dump code to sysdump, and the transaction dump code, a TRD, to the particular admin that you're trying to trap, in this, for example, in Azure. The system initialization table, or SIT, needs to specify the option dump equals yes. And the CETR transaction is used to set various trace and domain component settings. And I'd like to show you some examples of that by moving on to slide number 9. Now, what I've done here is, for your reference, I've attached the output from the CEMT Inquire system. And you can see near the bottom, there's an option called dumping, and the option says sysdump. Now, if it has, I believe, no sysdump, you can overtype this value with system in order to provide that setting. Okay, let's continue with slide number 10. Now, here we have the CETR dialog. We'll be talking about CICS aux traces later, but I decided to discuss CETR here because a sysmdump can include an internal aux trace. And as I mentioned earlier, this is very useful if you want to see CICS events that happen before the advent occurred. Now, notice that the internal trace is set to started in my example here, and the trace table size is set to 12 meg. We'll talk a little bit more about components in a moment, but the trace table size needs to be sufficiently large in order to hold all of the component data that we request and try to avoid any wraparound that can overlay previous trace entries. Now, also, you see that I have the auxiliary trace status set to started. Now, this is necessary if you want to generate a standalone aux trace, which is important for diagnosing non-ABIN problems like slope performance. Now, at the bottom, I want to just note for you to be sure to set the master flags to on in order to enable this tracing. I actually recently had a customer send me an aux trace that had only 5 entries in it. And I was puzzled as to what was going on with this because the customer said, well, I set, you know, all these components the way you want me to, and I don't know why there isn't any more information. Well, when we took a look at their CETR settings, it turned out they did not have these master flags on. So I just want to alert you to that. Okay, let's talk more about those components which I was mentioning. You display the dialog by pressing the PF4 components. And this will take you to the next dialog, which I illustrate on slide 11. If we could move there, please. Thank you. Okay. Now, this dialog controls the amount of information that you want the aux trace to contain from each of the various components. Now, as you can see, there are quite a lot of components. But the two components that are especially valuable to us is application, or AP, and the CICS exec interface, or EI. And we ask that you specify, that you enable extra information from these components by specifying 1-2 under the column standard. Now, we don't want to ignore any of the other components, of course, so what we ask is that we set them to show only the minimal data by setting them to 1. Now, because we're setting all of the components to a minimum of 1, that's why we ask that the trace table size be large enough in order to contain all this component data. Now, I had highlighted AP and EI, but depending on the type of error, we may want to display additional information from other components. One example that I can think of is, say you're trying to work in remote debug mode, and you're experiencing a TCP/IP error connecting to the remote client, we may decide that we need more information from the sockets domain, or SO. And so we would ask the customer to set SO equal to 1-2, just like AP and EI. I should also note that the data sets that are used for containing the standalone aux trace, namely the DFH AUXT and the BUXT, need to also be sufficiently large in order to contain all of this component data. Okay, let's move on to slide number 12. Now, I had mentioned earlier that there are, for LE-enabled applications, that there are those three LE options, the abnormal termination of enclave, the terminating thread actions, and the trap-on, that you need to specify in order to generate an abend sysm dump as close to, you know, the actual point of failure. And in the next two slides, we're going to take a look at the two transactions, DTCN and CADP, which are used to define the debugging profiles used for debugging CICS applications. And I want to focus on a particular dialogue in these two transactions. Now, as I state, DTCN is a transaction used to define the debugging profile that identifies which application to debug. But you can also specify additional LE runtime options in this dialog. And in DTCN, you display that by pressing the PF9 options key. And that's what I illustrate in this slide here. And at the bottom of this dialog, you can see where I've specified the three LE options I mentioned earlier that are used for generating the dump. Now let's move on to slide 13, where I show a similar dialog for CADP. CADP, this is an alternate way of defining the debugging profile. CADP is a transaction that is shipped by the CICS product, whereas DTCN is shipped by the debug tool product. And you can see a similar dialog to DTCN, and if you look at the bottom, again, we see where the three LE options are specified. Okay, now let's continue our CICS discussion by moving on to slide number 14, please. Just a few more points about generating sysm dumps in CICS. Now, you can also force a dump using the CEMT perform snap commands for problems such as, you know, hangs that don't automatically generate sysm dump like an abend could. Or if for whatever reason your region is not really set up to automatically generate dumps. We had talked about the CETR settings. My understanding is that when you use the CEMT perform snap command, that it will use those component and other trace settings that you specified in the CETR dialog. Another point I wanted to make was currently you can't use CEE ops DD statements to specify the LE runtime parameters because my understanding is currently the CEE ops DD statement is not recognized by CICS. And also, finally, I just wanted to let you know that the discussion I've made the past few minutes, I've tried to summarize in a tech note, which you can view online at this web link, which I've attached to the bottom. Okay, that's it for CICS. Let's move on to slide number 15. Now, this actually is a pretty important topic with a lot of our customers because more than a number of times we've encountered customers who are unable to generate sysm dumps. And what I'd like to do is just present a few considerations to look at if this problem occurs. Now, it may be just a matter of not specifying the appropriate, you know, LE runtime options, like the three that we discussed earlier, or, you know, setting the proper, you know, parameters in CICS, like in CETR, for example. But sometimes, as I mentioned earlier, a site can be constrained for resources and has to put limitations on dump creation. In that case, the user needs to work with their system programmer in order to enable dump creation. Now, some other things to look into if you're not able to generate a sysm dump is to check for any LE defaults for the region in case some of them might be specified as non-overridable and you're not able to, and they prevent you from specifying the LE runtime defaults that you need for generating the dump. For example, you can check your environment for a module such as CEEDOPT or CEEROPT, which contain the LE runtime defaults for that region. Also, in your JCL, if you're running like batch JCL, for example, check for the CEE dump and the SysUdump DD statements. Now, these DDs, as I tested this out one time just to verify this, these will take precedence over the SysMDump DD. And CEE dump and SysUdump are pre-formatted dumps that don't quite have as much of the system and control bug data for debug tool that we would like as compared to a SysM dump. Also, internally, we're not able to use IPCS for a pre-formatted dump, obviously, but internally, we have IPCS C-lists that we use, which help us analyze these kinds of problems by looking at the control data for debug tool. And we lose that advantage if all we have is a pre-formatted dump. Also, if you're using the fault analyzer in your region, there's an option called retain CICS dump that you should check. Be sure that it's set to the option all, not to auto, which I believe is the default for retain CICS dump. My understanding is that auto will suppress this dump, so be careful if you're running fault analyzer at the same time as debug tool. And also, and finally, there is a possibility that there is a ParmLive member that is being used to suppress dump creation. And I discuss that in the next slide, so if you could move to slide 16, please. Now, here I describe the change dump command, which is used to change the dump options. Now, in particular, the option NOSYM, N-O-S-Y-M, will suppress dump creation. And this change dump command is then placed in a member of ParmLive, usually called IEADMR00. So you might want to check your sys1.parmlive to see if you have a member by that name and check for the change dump command. Now, change dump is described in the MVS system commands, but I also want to alert you to a very valuable chapter in the MVS diagnosis tools book. The chapter is called Determining Why a Dump Was Suppressed, and I highly recommend this to users that are still unable to generate dumps even after they've gone through, you know, the basic procedures like we've talked to with CETR and DTCN, et cetera, et cetera. Okay, let's move on to slide 17 now. And I just want to mention two debug tool commands that can be used for generating diagnostics. One of them is called the call percent dump command, and this will generate a formatted CEE dump. And the other one is called is the call percent FA, which will generate a fault analyzer history. Now, as I mentioned earlier, a CE dump is a pre-formatted diagnostic, which does not have quite as much of the system data that the SysM dump does. But the CEE dump can be valuable in providing a lot of other LE-related data, including the module traceback. For those of you that are familiar with Fault Analyzer, you know about Fault Analyzer dumps, and the Fault Analyzer documentation will provide all the information that you need for reviewing those kinds of dumps. I need to note that there is a typo in this slide here. I said, however, call percent VER contains a traceback, and that should be, however, CEE dumps contain a traceback. So I apologize for that oversight. Now let's talk about CICS aux traces by moving on to slide 18, please. Now, as we've seen earlier, a SysM dump can contain an internal aux trace, but sometimes we need a standalone aux trace to diagnose problems such as slow performance or debug tool not starting for a program. In the past, we've had a number of customers that use multi-region configurations for CICS, and these standalone aux traces are particularly valuable when we're trying to understand what's going on in the various components of an MRO configuration, such as an AOR, and an application-owning region or a terminal-owning region. And so we will actually ask for a standalone aux trace for each of those regions in order to get a complete picture of what the problem is. Now, the CICS manuals provide all the information that you would need for CICS aux traces, but I just want to reiterate that when you use CETR to set all the domains to 1 and a couple others to 1-2, that the aux data sets themselves need to be sufficiently large in order to hold all of that data. Okay, now let's switch gears a little bit. We're going to talk about remote debug a bit. And so if we could please move to slide number 19. Now, when you run in remote debug mode, there is a constant interplay, as I mentioned earlier, between the client running at the workstation, for example, from the RDC debugger client, and the debug tool running on ZOS. And this communications is defined by EPDC, which is the Execution and Program Data Control Protocol. For example, an example of this communication would be, say if you want to monitor a variable, you know, the user would highlight that variable, they would right-click on it, and then a pop-up menu would appear, and then you would select Monitor Expression. Now, what happens under the covers is a request is then sent down to the ZOS host to obtain the appropriate information about that variable. And the debug tool running on ZOS will then perform internal processing, for example, to verify the variable's name, obtain its current value, et cetera, et cetera. And then debug tool will send a reply back to the workstation, which will then do its own processing to open a new monitor with this information about that variable. Another example is, say, you're setting a breakpoint. Again, a request is then sent down to the ZOS host, which will then perform, you know, whatever internal actions are needed to, like, obtain the statement number or update a breakpoint table, for example, et cetera, and then send a reply back to the workstation, which will then do things like, you know, creating a little icon next to the statement where you want to set the breakpoint. Okay, so those are examples of this kind of constant interplay that's going on. Now, sometimes, obviously, things go wrong. For example, say you're trying to monitor that variable and you get, like, an invalid expression error. Or maybe you're unable to set a breakpoint because of an invalid statement number or something like that. Okay, in this case, the EPDC trace is very valuable because it saves a history of all the exchanges between the workstation client and the debug tool on ZOS. Now, the EPDC trace doesn't run automatically. And what you have to do is there's a particular setting in the workstation client that you need to specify in order to activate it. Now, what I've done in this slide is I've listed the steps that you need to follow in the RDZ debugger client in order to activate this trace. I also want to point out that I've provided screen captures in the appendix of this PowerPoint presentation that illustrate exactly what the dialogues look like in RDZ to perform these steps. Okay, let's continue our EPDC discussion by moving on to slide number 20, please. Okay, in order to better isolate the problem and minimize the amount of activity in the EPDC trace, we highly recommend that you start the trace just before you're about to recreate the error, then run the actual error scenario, and then deactivate the trace or just, you know, close the debugging session. And what this does is it helps to focus on the specific problem and prevent any, you know, possible distractions from trying to, you know, go through a lot of unrelated activity. Now, the EPDC trace is going to, that's generated, is going to be a binary file. It'll have the extension of HEX and the file name that you specified when you activated the trace. and we ask that you send this binary file to IBM where we can then format it and then review that trace. Now, I also have a tech note for activating the EPDC trace, and I've attached it at the bottom here with this URL, so I present that for your reference in the future. Okay, now what I want to do is discuss the debug tool log. So if you could please move to slide 21. Thank you. Okay, now, as I said earlier and want to emphasize more, is that the debug tool log is one of the most valuable documents for diagnosing problems really of almost any kind. It contains the history of all the debugging actions that were taken by the user. And we know that some customers close the log window in order to, say, provide more screen space to view the program or the monitors. And that's fine from a usability point of view. But if you are encountering problems, we really, really recommend that you use the set log on command in order to activate the log window. Now, by default, the log saves 1,000 lines. So say if you're doing a lot of activity or maybe you're listing very large structures, for example, it's very useful to try the keep option of set log in order to set the log to a larger size than the default 1,000 lines. Also, there is a file option that you can use to save the log to a physical file. These options are all described in the debug tool reference guide. Now, just to be clear, the log window that I've been talking about is available if you are running in any of the 3270 modes, such as full screen mode or terminal interface manager. But if you're running in the remote mode, the window is called the debug console in RDZ, and this shows the same, a similar log history that the log window does in the 3270 interfaces. Now, in addition to the automatic log tracking of what actions were entered and what the results of those actions were, there's additional user information that you can insert into the log by using some additional commands. Now, one of them is the call percent VER command. And what this does is it shows you the PTF version level that is running. Now, why is this important? Sometimes the customer may be just missing a fix, and there's already a PTF available for the problem that they're seeing. And call percent VER will tell us, what level they are and what additional fixes are needed. But sometimes a customer may be, say, upgrading their debug tool to a newer version, or maybe they're upgrading their ZOS level or CICS, and they need to refresh their step lives or their LPA libraries or their TFHRPL concatenations, etc. And because we know that these kinds of major upgrades can be very complex and very detailed, there is a chance that a down-level debug tool library may slip through the cracks and not get updated properly. So call percent VER is really the best way to tell us for sure exactly what level of debug tool is running. The next command that's valuable is set message ID, MSG ID on. And this is useful because it displays the message IDs of the errors and other information in the debug tool log. By default, the message IDs are not displayed, but they are very useful for us and IBM to help determine which debug tool component had issued the particular message. And also the describe CUS or compile units command. This is used to display the information about the program that's being debugged. This will provide information such as like the compiler level that was used and the compile options that were used to build the program. Now, why would that be important? Some compile options, such as optimize, require special treatment by debug tool because, among other things, they change the way the machine code is generated. And so if we find out that the program has been compiled with optimize, we may have special kinds of advice to provide for that customer. Now, as I mentioned earlier, if you're running in 3270 mode, you can use the file option of set log to save the log to a physical file. However, unfortunately, currently, as I understand it, is that the file option is not supported by set log if you're debugging in remote mode. So in this case, you need to do something like, you know, copying and pasting the contents of the debug console window into a separate file, which you would then send to IBM. Okay, now I'd like to talk about the system or JES log. If we could move on to slide number 22, please. Okay, I'm sure you're all familiar with the system log, also called the JES log, which you view through ISPF using the SDSF option. Although the debug tool log can contain many debug tool messages, there are some messages that are sent to the system log. So it's very valuable for us to take a look at the system log as well as the debug tool log. Now, the messages in the system log will have IDs that begin with the letters EQA, and they can describe a variety of errors, such as VTEM problems or CICS errors or other add-ins. And in addition to the debug tool messages, certainly ZOS will output its own diagnostics, as well as other products such as RACF. And in order to get a more complete picture of the problem, it's important for us to also review these other related messages. Now, for your reference, what I've done was I've attached a few examples of EQA messages that are output to the system log. And I do this just, first of all, so that you see what can occur, but also just to kind of, for your awareness, if you encounter an add-in, for example, just as a little reminder that, oh, let's look in the system log and see if there are any of these EQA messages that can help us diagnose the problem. So let's look at some of these examples by starting with slide number 23, please. Okay, in this example, we see EQA messages pertaining to an OC4 add-in. And I've highlighted some of the key information in this output, such as the module and the offset of the add-in, the debug tool version level, and even way down at the bottom, we have the LE level. Debug tool is very dependent on the language environment programming interfaces. And so if a customer is upgrading from, an older level of ZOS to a newer level, that certainly is going to impact the level of LE that they're running. So that's very valuable information for us to know. Now, the debug tool level, the version level, in this example, is the V10-based product. But if you have installed PTFs for debug tool, this message would also show the associated APAR of the PTF that is running for that version of debug tool. Okay, let's look at some more examples by moving on to slide 24, please. Okay, here are two more examples that show a CICS add-in and a TCPIP error. The CICS example shows an ATCV error, which is an invalid operation on a logical unit. The TCPIP example is a connection error. For example, there could have been an attempt to connect to the remote debug front end, but it failed for some reason, such as maybe the IP is invalid or the port number is not correct. Okay, now let's talk more about job outputs by moving on to slide number 25, please. Okay, now job outputs, sometimes called held output in JES, are also viewed through ISPF using SDSF. Now, this is especially valuable when the customer is first installing debug tool or migrating to a newer version or upgrading PTFs. So if installing a PTF results in, say, an apply error, the job output is probably the best source of information for debugging this particular error, which would be an SMPE error in this example. Now, debug tool also provides a number of installation verification programs which are shipped in the SEQA SAMP library with debug tool. Now, many of these jobs are batch jobs that run in the background without user interaction. And these IVPs contain really detailed instructions that describe, the, among other things, the expected results if the IVP is run successfully. But if there are any problems with the IVP, then we will ask that the held output for this job be sent to IBM for review. Now, because IVPs are very important, I've attached a few sample outputs from one of the IVPs which I would like to discuss. So let's please move on to slide number 26 to discuss that. This program, this IVP is called EQAW IVP4, and it runs a small COBOL program in dynamic debug mode and issues several debug tool commands. As you can see by this output, it starts by first building the program, and then you can see the return codes from each of the steps of this IVP, you know, namely the compile and link, and then you can see that it runs the job in a go step, and then the output is printed out. Well, let's continue with slide number 27. Okay, in this slide, we're continuing the job output of IVP4, and we can see the output of the various debugging commands. And we ask our customers to try to review this particular output very carefully and be sure that it matches the expected output as described in the IVP instructions. Now, I've also attached a sample apply output. If you could please move on to slide 28. Here, the user is installing a PTF UK40604 for version 8 of Debug Tool, and if there are any errors to this apply, IBM, again, would request the output, and we would then take a look at the GIM messages and the rest of the output for an understanding of what the problem is. Okay, I'd like to discuss screen captures, please, if we could move on to slide number 29. Okay, now because Debug Tool is a highly interactive product, it's sometimes very useful to provide screen captures that that show what the user is seeing. For example, if a CICS customer is saying that the data fields in their BMS maps are showing, you know, bad values when they're running with Debug Tool, or say double byte character data, like national characters, aren't being displayed properly. In remote debug, the customer might report that colors aren't correct or there's some pop-up message that they're seeing, etc. And it's often a lot easier to create a screen capture than trying to describe the problem in words. Now, you know, I'm sure there are other products that can create screen prints, but sometimes just the Windows alternate print screen command is perfectly sufficient. Okay, now let's move to slide number 30. I just want to briefly mention the application performance analyzer. A customer is reporting very slow response time or a hang or, say, high CPU usage, for example, short on storage and CICS, a monitor report is very, very valuable. I understand there are, you know, plenty of very good products out in the market for providing this kind of information. From IBM, we have the application performance analyzer, which can tell very detailed, even down to the code block within a program that is using, you know, a high amount of CPU or storage. Since a full discussion of this is really outside the scope of this hour, I direct you to the website, which provides all the documentation for APA. Okay, now I'd like to move on to slide number 31, where we're going to talk about sending documentation to IBM. Sending files through FTP is especially recommended for large files such as dumps and logs, and also for binary data such as load modules, dumps. Now, you can send most files through FTP, but it may be easier for customers to simply use email, especially for smaller files such as graphical data, you know, screen captures, etc. The EPDC hex file is often small enough to send as an email attachment. We do ask that customers try to avoid sending load modules through as email attachments, because the transfer to MVS can sometimes cause a loss in data attributes. Okay, let's continue on to slide number 32 as far as sending documentation is concerned. I provide a couple of points for sending documentation. Again, we ask that all files sent to FTP to be terse. because the FTP server automatically tries to unterse any incoming files. And if it's unable to do so, the PMR will get a message saying that intervention is required. Okay, now sometimes when we're trying to recreate problems, we ask the customer to send their test case, which would include their load modules. And we ask that the load modules please be in a partitioned data set, which is then terse and then sent to FTP. Okay, let's move on to slide number 33. I have a few points about PDSEs. They're special files. You actually need to compress them first by using the XMIT command before you terse them and then send that terse file to FTP. Also, the FTP server is going to automatically assume that the first three qualifiers of the FTP file name be the PMR number, branch ID, and country code. And if it doesn't find it, that can cause the file to be put into some other file directory, and we can lose time by trying to search for that file. So we asked if you would please try to adhere to that naming convention. Okay, I've also attached the FTP command for sending files on slide 34 for your reference. So if you could just go through to slide 34. These are pretty self-explanatory, so again, I put these here for your reference. And down at the bottom, there's also a web link that provides information about using FTP. So let's now move on to slide 35. And these are the examples of the addresses, the tech support address in particular. We ask that you try to route emails to, because this will route emails to our ECU rep server, which is used throughout the IBM service organization. Otherwise, if you just send an email to a particular person, another person that may have the answer already won't get the information, and we may lose time by doing a lot of extra diagnosis, which is not necessary. Okay, let's conclude with slide number 36, please. Okay, we have gone through a lot of different kinds of documents. Obviously, this isn't a complete list because depending on the kind of problem that you're doing, we may have to request other information like, VTAM files, for example, or REACH and JCL. But we will advise the customer as far as that is concerned. So we will take it, PMR by PMR and let you know what information we really need. So let's move on to page 37, please, where I have listed some additional WebSphere resources. These are not DBook tool specific, but they're really a general description of the online resources for all WebSphere products. We are getting near the end of the hour, so I will defer to your review at a later time these references. Okay, that's the end of my discussion. Thank you very much for listening. I'd like to turn it over to our moderator, Joseph.
Thank you, Thomas, for a great presentation. At this point in time, Trisha, we would like to open the line for questions.
Our first question comes from Elton Williams. Your line is open.
The question I have concerns the LE options on, page 13. You mentioned the LE options that are needed for CICS. Well, what about in batch?
Batch CICS?
No, just regular batch, because we would also be doing some debugging for batch. If we have some errors there, what particular LE options may be necessary?
Three options that I described on page 13 are applicable to batch.
Both, okay. Because I know there are different places, where you specify one for batch and other LE options for CICS. I just wanted to make sure that they were the same.
Yes, I believe it's the LE programming reference that talks about different ways to specify LE runtime options. There are quite a number of ways to do so, but I want to highlight the most common ones.
Okay.
Yes, the CE dump, as I described it, is a pre-formatted diagnostic. That is different from the SysM dump, which is a binary diagnostic. And yes, the CE dump contains a lot of LE information, including the traceback, if that's been preserved. Again, it depends on when you actually generate the diagnostic to be sure that all that LE information is still in the system and it has not been purged.
Okay, I think you've answered our questions. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening, sir.
I show no other questions at this time.
Thank you. At this time, we will conclude the presentation.